This is Fresh Air. A mysterious disease is being monitored in the American Southwest. 24 cases have been reported. 12 of those people have died. The symptoms include high fever, muscle aches, cough, and fluid in the lungs that can result in suffocation. Preliminary lab findings suggest that the disease may be caused by a virus spread by rats. Are new viruses heading our way? We called Yale epidemiologist Dr. Robert Shoup. He co-chaired a committee on emerging microbial threats to health and edited the committee's report to the Institute of Medicine. If the disease in the Southwest is a virus, would it be a new virus or a new strain of an existing virus?
Well, it would be a relative, sort of like a first cousin of some viruses that are known. And these are called hantaviruses. The most famous of these viruses is the cause of the Korean hemorrhagic fever, which afflicted our troops in the 1950s in Korea.
If the disease in the Southwest is being caused by a strain of the hantavirus, which has never been known to kill people in the United States before, what would the implications be?
Well, the implications would be that we have a focus of the disease in this area. If our evidence is correct, it's probably localized. In other words, it may be over a relatively wide area in New Mexico and Arizona, but it's not likely to be in very far from there, and it's not likely to spread from there.
The hantavirus is carried by rats and rodents, right?
Yes.
What would the explanation be for how a new strain developed here? I mean, would it be a rat that came from another country aboard a fruit crate or something? What are the possible explanations?
Probably not. No, probably it's this is a genus of viruses, a set of viruses that has evolved with rodents. It's probably been there for a long, long time, maybe centuries or more than centuries. And as other forms of life evolve, so do viruses. And they go along with their rodent.
So in the new strain of virus that we think we're seeing in the Southwest, it just might be a kind of like natural evolution of the virus?
It's probably been there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And probably something has changed in the ecology of the area.
And why would that change the virus? I mean, why would that make us more susceptible to the virus?
It doesn't change the virus, and it doesn't make us more susceptible. What it does, let's say, for instance, that the factor that's changed is the food supply of the rodents. That's one of the hypotheses that's being explored right now. If the food supply of the rodents increases, that will permit the population of rodents to increase. Since there would be more rodents, it's a numbers game. There might be more chances of people coming into contact. And that could lead to an unusual number of cases or an epidemic.
You say they're exploring whether the food source for rodents has changed. And apparently Navajo tribal elders say that for the first time in the memory, the pinyon trees had nuts through the year and the rats feed on those nuts.
Well, yes, that's what the newspaper and television has been telling us, and very often when new diseases appear, the people in the area where the diseases occur have some idea about what's responsible. They may not understand why, but we as epidemiologists listen to the local folk.
Mm-hmm. When I think about viruses spreading to new parts of the world they hadn't existed in before, what I immediately think of is travel, you know, that people are traveling more than ever and that, you know, the world is shrinking. Does that have anything to do with that, or is that just common wisdom that doesn't really hold up?
No, it does hold up. If one travels into an area today, for instance, where there's a virus disease, one can become infected. The virus has an incubation period in a person or in an animal, and if with our modern travel, we can return very quickly, or within 24 hours from most parts of the world, we can get to the United States. So we could be infected one place, return to the United States, and be able to spread the virus. Fortunately, most viruses require very precise conditions in which to spread, so that the conditions in the United States are going to be different from the conditions overseas. And that's the usual series of events. That is, that people become infected, they return to the United States, and they don't start any epidemic. However, an unlikely event can occur, and we know unlikely events do occur and will occur, in which the agent will spread.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Robert Shope, an epidemiologist at Yale University Medical School. He was also on the Committee on Emerging Microbial Threats to Health of the Institute of Medicine that released a report on emerging infections. We're going to take a short break and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about the new spread of diseases. My guest is Yale epidemiologist Robert Shope. You edited a report on emerging infections. It was a report by the Committee on Emerging Microbial Threats to Health for the Institute of Medicine. And this report warned that there was an increasing threat of viruses to the United States, and that basically we were letting down our guard. What led you to that conclusion?
We had a committee of 19 persons, specialists in infectious diseases, and it was the first thing that led us to the conclusion was the common experience of the people on the committee, and we're able to document that infections are increasing. For instance, the use of antibiotics in the United States and in the world, not just the United States, but the use of antibiotics has increased dramatically over the past three decades. The antibiotics against bacteria lead to an evolution of the bacteria to become resistant to the antibiotics. So this is one of the things that's happening. We're also seeing diseases like HIV disease. And I think probably AIDS was one of the major stimulating factors for us to look at why new diseases are appearing and what we can do about them.
Well, you think the United States has let down its guard. What aren't we doing now that we used to do to track new microbial threats?
Well, we went through an era in which we developed a number of new vaccines. We developed new antibiotics, and this led us to complacency, and understandably so. We really thought that infectious diseases were conquered and were a thing of the past. I think most of us understood the principles that the organisms would eventually mutate or change and outwit us again. But we turned to try to conquer other things in science. And we've now come to realize that we can't give up. We can't turn to other things. We can do other things, but we can't forget the infectious agents. They're with us.
How are viruses tracked around the world? What kind of surveillance programs do we have?
Around the world, we have some networks of laboratories that are linked through the World Health Organization. We also have networks of diagnostic facilities that are linked to individual governments. The United States, for instance, maintains military laboratories, which are very well equipped and staffed. An example is a laboratory in Bangkok, Thailand. We also maintain research programs through the National Institutes of Health in various tropical countries. The French government has a similar set of laboratories, for instance, in French, especially in French West Africa, so that there is a way to find new viruses. Unfortunately, we don't have enough. And
enough what?
We don't have enough listening posts.
Mm-hmm.
We now know that AIDS was present in Africa long before we recognized what it was, and that's only one example. We probably could find the diseases more rapidly than we do, and learn what they are and be ready for them.
You said if our surveillance was better of infections around the world, we'd be better prepared for them. What could we do to be prepared?
Oh, there are several things that we can do. One class of agents that is a threat are the mosquito-borne and agents that are carried by other arthropods, such as ticks. These, in a generic sense, we need to be ready to control insects and ticks. We need research on new pesticides. We need increased monitoring with the existing pesticides to make sure that the biting flying arthropods or the biting arthropods are not becoming resistant to them. That's one thing. Second thing that we need to do is to have an infrastructure in our vaccine industry, which is capable of reacting rapidly in the manufacturing of vaccines. This, I think, is very important. Right now, if we have to rely on commercial firms, which have a profit motive naturally, to produce a new vaccine, it takes a disaster. There has to be a big market out there for the vaccine before the companies can afford to do it.
What kind of reaction did you get to the report that you edited that said we're letting down our guard in the surveillance of new infections?
We've had a very positive reaction. One thing that happened immediately was that the initial printing of the report sold out, and it had to be reprinted, which, in fact, sold out sooner than any report that the Institute of Medicine has ever put out. So that we knew that people were interested in the subject. The Centers for Disease Control has reacted by developing a very interesting and very comprehensive plan for monitoring and reacting to new diseases in the United States. And they also have some plans for overseas monitoring. The National Institutes of Health has adopted the concept of emerging diseases in its research program. And I think that you will see an increase in research in the United States in this area.
So you think your criticism is getting results?
I think so, yes. The moment of truth will come when we see whether new resources flow into this area.
Dr. Shope, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, you're welcome. I've enjoyed it.
Dr. Robert Shope is a professor of epidemiology at Yale University School of Medicine. He edited a report for the Institute of Medicine on emerging infections. This is Fresh Air.